It's time for the Artist Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I am an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie. And I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Kale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot. Tied illustrative hand in watercolor, tin and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. Hello, this is Clyde J. Kale, and this is Monday, July the 27th. This is episode 56 of the Artist Friends Podcast, and I'm here with my two best artist friends, Constance and Diane. Hello, Diane.
Hi. Hi, Constance. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Constance.
Hello, Diane. Hello, Clyde. Hello, everybody.
Last week, it was just me and Diane because Constance had some air conditioning problems. I think she got some of that resolved. We're glad to have you back with us, Constance. We missed you.
I'm glad to be back. I'm still having a few air conditioning woes, but I'm working around them.
Okay. Now, the recommended video for our subject for this episode, episode 56, was talking about our painting technique and maybe giving a definition or presenting some artist terms for our listeners who are non-artists, our non-artist listeners. And if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, that's talkartpodcast.com, you can see the recommended video links and get an idea of what we're talking about. And what always amazes me is that like with any industry segment, as artists, when we get amongst ourselves, we utilize what we call art speak, and terminology that we understand ourselves. And if we're not careful, when we're talking to non-artists, we just blow them away. We blow them away completely. I'll give you an example. I was talking to my mother. Yeah, she's just completely excited and happy about that. I'm pursuing a professional art career because, you know, she's always encouraged my creativity while I was young, and she never thought I would ever really pursue the artist life. So I was, you know, talking to her about painting, and I was saying talking about the colors, you know, I like to use a, sometimes with a still life, I like to paint in the Alla Prima, especially with these oils. And, I use mostly my primary colors and mix all my other colors to get a really good shade and then tint my hues. After I said that, my mother, who is so straightforward, said, "What the hell did you just say? Are you speaking Italian to me or what?" And I realized what I was doing. You know, I said, whoa, okay, Mom, I'm sorry. Because my mother is not an artist, and she is not educated on the art speak whatsoever. So I had to break things down. But it got me thinking, how often do we as artists, we end up doing that, you know? And when we meet people that non-artists or people that we're trying to sell our paintings to, you know, that we end up going into art speak. Diane, give me an example. What kind of artist are you?
I am an impressionistic representational artist. But people might not know what that means.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think most people know what realism is. I mean, but impressionistic is a little less like it's more an impression of something, not the exact duplicate of what you see. So it's sort of a combination of two types. But from somebody that doesn't really know that, I guess it would be really difficult to understand that. You don't think about it. You just assume people understand, you know, the terms and stuff, and you don't really stop to think about it a lot of times.
Yep. And we have to learn the art speak, especially whenever we are talking to, when we meet gallerists and art creators and professional collectors and professional dealers, because they expect that. You know, if we come up and we say, well, you know, I just use a lot of bright colors and I paint what I see. They're going to, okay, yeah, but, but as you know, we have to remember when we are speaking to non-artists and the other people, the common people, I guess is the word.
Well, I think that's true of any kind of career, whatever, you know, within that career, you have your own lingo kind of, and, you know, the people that are in that same demographic are, you know, they understand what you're saying, but when you talk to somebody outside of that, they have no clue what you're talking about a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Constance,
what kind of artist are you?
I'm definitely an impressionistic painter and also sometimes an abstract painter.
Okay. Now, break that down into the common man's language. If you guys could see her right now, she's a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, well, with abstract art, you just kind of make up a composition as you go with the colors that you've chosen on the color wheel that you want to use, and then you just manipulate it on the canvas to have a composition, which can be very loose and abstract. But with impressionist painting, you still use a color wheel to get your paint, your, you know, the colors that you want to use in your painting, but it's representational, but it's impressionistic paintings are not like photographs. That's realism. Realism is almost like a photograph. Impressionism is taking it away from being a photograph and looking more painterly. And I know that's painterly is a term that artists use, but it takes it and makes it more painterly. I don't know what is another good word to use for painterly?
Where you could
looser and not so photorealistic.
Right.
The brush strokes are more visible. They have more of, and I'm using another painter term, impasto, which means that there's thicker paint to make your to make the impression of whatever it is you're painting, like a leaf or something.
This is hard, isn't it? This is hard.
It is hard. It's hard, you know, to come across. And I mean, it's like a doctor trying to tell you what kind of a heart trouble you have, and you're going to have to do something about that heart, but not use people terms to tell you what he's going to have to do to dissect your heart and make it better. But still, you know, when you're painting impressionistic style, the brush strokes are going to be more visible. There's going to be thicker paint.
When I'm talking to people, most people understand or know who Vincent van Gogh is. So I'll say, well, kind of like his painting, not exactly like his style, but kind of like his style, you know, because, you know, he was considered, but he still wasn't an impressionist. He was considered a post-impressionist, to use the art history lingo. But
a lot of the terms are easier to show somebody than they are to try to describe it.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's really, it's much easier to see it.
And, you know, like, you know, Van Gogh, if you look, you know, you can see his brush strokes and you know, the marks of the brush and the paint on the canvas and the bright colors, vivid colors. And
Monet was an impressionist. And his brush strokes are visible, and the color is vivid.
The
thickness of the paint was more thick than, I mean, for a realist, realism, they don't even want you to see a brush stroke.
Absolutely.
If you see a brush stroke, then that's offensive. You know, that's how they see it.
Yeah. And then they've got what they call hyperrealism, where they actually, it's just a photograph, you know, basically it looks just like a photograph.
Pretty much. But that in itself is a whole genre of painting that people like, and
yeah,
you know, it's pretty cool in itself, I think, you know, because it takes a lot of skill to master something like that. But I can't paint that tightly.
Me neither. However, what I will say, when I, you know, my little spiel, you know, is I'm I always use an emerging artist I create works in watercolor and acrylic and oil paints and pen and ink with a tight illustrative hand. The first time I told my mother that, she said, "So you draw, right?" She knew what illustrate meant. I said, "Yeah, but I draw with paint." "Oh, how's that different?" Oh, and that we had another hour conversation, I think. Yeah, trying to explain. Really, talking to my mother is good exercise for me to learn how to talk with common people to explain my art, you know, and But it's hard. It's really difficult because we get so used to our art speak that when we have to describe our art to people, it gets difficult, you know. And some of my work is, you know, more illustration. If you think of drawings and like cartoon-like, you know, and images that used to be in magazines, you know, that some of my work is style is a bit of that. And then of course my painting, what I'm trying to, by taking this course with Kelly Folsom, you know, I'm trying to loosen up, trying to get loose, you know, so that my paintings you can see more of the brush strokes, you know, especially with oil painting, which is really wonderful for that. You know, I'm trying not to blend so much because I'm still too tight. I've got to, loosen up, and I got to create what's called, what Stefan Bauman calls it, happy accidents, you know. And I think it was last episode, Diane, or the episode before that, when we were talking about perfectionism, you know, I'm still too much of a perfectionist. I think that's keeping me from loosening up you know, and throwing the paint.
But you need to watch one of Jerry's. He has a whole little talk that he does about perfectionism. Was it Jerry's Artorama? He has a little thing about perfectionism. You could watch that one.
Yeah, well, that's what I was referring to. I think Diane, it was one of our recommended videos, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and we had talked a bit about that. First thing I said to Diane was, "Diane, you're a perfectionist," and she admitted it.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things I got from his thing was that the master says that once you have failed so many times, he told a student that until you have failed, I have failed more times than you have tried, then you become more of a master. It's a, you know, you have to keep trying and trying and trying, and in your failures, that's how you learn to become a master.
Yep.
Go watch that one with Jerry's about becoming a perfectionist master.
When I was learning how to draw and stuff, I copied a lot. I mean, and I wanted it to be exact copy. And I'd draw something over and over and over again until I got it, you know, as exact as I could get it, as perfect as I thought it was. And, you know, so that's kind of where that came from, I guess. But doing a lot of things, you have to learn all the rules of, you know, whatever it is, so that you know how to break them later, like, and you know what's important, what to keep, and what to throw away, and, you know, so a lot of that is just from the learning process.
It's like exercising. I think we've used that analogy before. You know, an athlete, you know, that goes, you know, bodybuilders and runners, and you know, they have to keep exercising, you know, those muscles before they get better. Artists is the same way, you know.
You have the hand eye coordination that you have to get your brain to connect to your hand so that you can put the mark where you want it to go and not just anywhere.
Absolutely.
You know? And that takes a lot of practice. Do it.
Right. So that becomes second nature, you know, that
like
you're not.
Stephen Bauman, you know, and that the one recommended video when he talked about, he shocked his students. He said, the idea of painting, and then when you're done, throw your paints away. And the students were like, "What?" Yeah. they're exercises. You're exercising your brain. The more you paint, the better you get at it. So you just have to keep. So he says, as you proceed, you're going to be embarrassed by some of your early work. So he said, just, you know, throw these things away. Of course,
I like his analogy to piano. Learning any instrument, really learning to play the piano. Oh, yeah. You practice and practice. You don't record all that, and even if you did, you'd never go back and listen to it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I mean, okay. Some points to that. Not looking back at your.
Let's take a brief break, and we have sponsors now. So let's take a break for our sponsor. Available at www.mpirshop.com are some unique design. Take a look at my work, and if you like my style, I could create a piece of artwork for you. Maybe you have that favorite pet, that cat or a dog, or boat, car, or maybe a truck, or maybe a house or a vacation spot designed by me, and they are at a very reasonable price too. So please visit mpirshop.com. Please send your commission requests to cjkale@signmystery-otr.com. That's cjkale@signmystery-otr.com. And let's create some beautiful art together. Again, mpirshop.com. That's www.mpirshop.com. And welcome back. And you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 56. Did I say that right? Yeah. I always get those numbers messed up. Episode 56 for July the 27th. And I'm here with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And we're talking about painting technique and art speak and talking to common people. I don't want to say normal people because it's like putting us on a pedestal. Like we're the elite. Artists aren't
artists.
Artists are not the elite. At least I never think of myself as the elite. But you know, I guess non-artists. Yeah, just your ordinary folks. Now, in the video from Mikey that was recommended, you know, he said 14 terms, artist terms that are embarrassing if you don't know. I'm not going to go down through the 14 terms. We've already mentioned a couple of them. But I just jotted down a few, and let's get Diane and Constance to explain them in normal terminology, if they're not embarrassed about knowing the meaning of the term. So here is a term, shade. That's for Constance. Constance, what is a shade? When they're talking about painting and drawing or whatever, what's a shade?
A shade is when you add black to a pure color.
Bingo. She gets an A for that, folks. Short and simple. That's what it is. What's a tint?
Me again?
Yep.
A tint is when you add white to a pure color. There you
go. Yeah, they both go hand in hand. Shade and tint. It's that simple. When you hear an artist saying, well, you know, I like working in multiple shades. Okay, what they're saying is they like working with colors, added multiple colors with black added. That's simple.
Yep.
Yeah, and when you put that all together, that becomes more of a monochromatic or a chromatic type painting, you know? It's all the same color. It's just got different shades by the adding of black or different tints by the adding of white. Okay, here's one. I know Diana is not going to know this. Well, I don't know. If she watched the video, she probably will. What's a fugitive color?
Fugitive colors are colors that are not light fast. They, in the light, in the sunlight, they'll fade out eventually and disappear. Some of them.
Yep. Those, and I like his, Mikey's definition. He said they're not very light fastness, and they came about because of the commercial art industry, you know, and commercial artists had to do mock-ups for the fashions and whatnot, and they used the real bright colors, gouache.
They used gouache, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is less light fast anyway.
Yep. And they're real bright, and and then in the era when black lights came about, and you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, and even up to the 90s when black lights were still popular, you wanted to use fugitive colors to get that black light to pick up, and so you can go, wow, you know, and get high without without taking any dope. Of course, some of them did take dope that enhanced it even further. That was always they're always real bright and snappy and. Yeah, there's a possible place for them, but the key point is they will fade, you know, with time.
They don't hold up underwear.
That's it. Now, we've mentioned these before, plein air, when Diane says she's a plein air artist. And normal speak, plein air, what's that?
Hanging outside, basically.
Yeah,
that's what we always used to say, and like the term now has become a big thing to say. Plein air. We never used to call ourselves plein air painters years ago.
Yeah, used to be an outdoor painter. But
yeah, you just go outside and paint. paint some life.
There was a magazine, you know, a national magazine, Outdoor Painters, you know, and now I think they changed the title. Now they call them plein air painters.
They did change the title to that. Yeah,
and the term plein air has been around since, you know, back in the Impressionist time when they were outside painting. That's like they were the ones that first started going outside and painting. And they you know, that's what they called them. What was all a French term, and that's where they were in France. So,
yep.
In plein air. So, yep. That's kind of how it came about.
And here's one. Here's one for Constance. A la prima.
A la prima. Yes, that's painting it all in one session.
Probably the only Italian that you speak. This is an Italian term. A la prima. I paint a la prima.
CC.
Yeah, it's painting.
Cow, baby.
completing a painting in one setting. And in the case of using oil, it's also wet on wet. You're not giving time for the paint to dry. You know, more traditional paint. I think Diane, you don't paint much a la prima, do you?
Well, plein air painting is basically a la prima, but I don't paint that way usually in the studio, unless I'm doing a short study, like, then I'll do it. But
I like to paint. I like to paint a la prima.
And since I've been getting into oils,
I am liking
it too. I am really liking it. I had my doubts about it, you know, but then when I started painting with oil and salt, just how fantastic you can blend the colors, and it's just, it's addictive. It's very addictive, you know? And
yeah.
You get tired.
Yeah, I might go back and touch up the next day something I can't get to stick on where I want it to stick on because it's just so yummy and gooey, and I want to highlight where I can't, and I just can't get the highlight to stick on because it's just gotten to that point where it's just yummy and gooey that right there where I want the highlight.
Well, I've done
so I'll let it set up for a day, and then I'll go back and put a highlight.
I've done the same thing. A couple oil paintings that just weren't, you know, they weren't coming, like that painting of that catfish that I did. It just wasn't coming good. I had too much too much green in it. So I set it aside, and it took almost, because I had so much paint on, it took almost 3 weeks to dry. But then when it was dry to touch, I went back and painted over it. But for the most part, most of my oil paintings are all a la prima in one setting. And either from a photograph or from a live setting. And it just, I can't say enough about it. I enjoy it. I really enjoy pushing that paint around. It just, you know, like Stefan Bauman says, luscious. Put that luscious paint on there with luscious, bold brushstrokes, which is helping me to get loose because I still paint tight, even a la prima. I want to make sure it's almost like number paint. I want to get in the lines. And the art course that we're taking with Kelly Folsom, she says, forget about the lines. You got a little sloppy, let it go. You know, it adds character, you know, in her.
Yeah.
Because
she's going to loosen you up, Clyde.
Yeah,
see it.
Yep, the lessons I've been doing, I've been getting loosened up a little bit, and which that term, a la prima term, goes into the term of impasto. And Diane, you want to take that?
Constance just mentioned about that. I mean, the thicker paint and
So that's what it means, folks. Just a normal term. It's just thick paint, you know. And sometimes you want thick paint. And that's like Kelly Folsom, something I never even considered. In one of her videos, she talks about, says, for your background, you want it to be thin paint, but for your items up front, there you use impasto. That's where you put your thicker paint because it
draws your eye.
It draws your eye, and instead of, like, you know, Stefan Bauman always uses the term focal point, you know, as his, you know, as the item. I like Kelly's term for that. She says the star of the painting.
Where's the star of the show?
Yeah, the star of the show. That's what she calls it. I think
the light giver is the star of the show. You have to figure out where is this light giver, the star of the show.
Right.
Then you work around all that.
And winning and creating your competition. So we went through the terms, and you two described your painting. Now, one more time, But this time, instead of saying it in the using the term, Diane, what kind of painter are you?
I paint my impression of realism.
Okay.
I guess that.
Yeah. Yeah. At least you didn't use the, you know, the I'm an impressionist realistic painter. No, you paint what is in your eye, what you see, your impression of that object or that scene or that item that you're painting. Right. Okay, Constance, your turn now.
To describe what kind of painter I am?
What kind of painter you are, but not using art speak. Using normal. Yeah, I know this is hard.
Well, some terms are pretty commonly known, I think, like abstract. I think most people know what abstract is.
Yeah, don't use
abstract. And something realistic is. I mean, there are certain terms that pretty much everybody knows, but.
Yeah, because they've come across them, you know.
Yeah.
How do you describe a la prima?
I'll give you a hint.
All at one time.
Well, okay. I paint wet on wet.
There you go.
Not realistic.
Okay.
And then with the abstracts, it's just, I don't know how to describe that. I use the color wheel, pick out my colors.
We had a guest artist on here with one of our episodes, Kushlani, who's more of an abstract painter. And she gave a definition, which I had never really thought of. Because I asked her, I said, because I don't tend to like too much abstract. You know, artwork. I mean, I don't do any at all. My brain just doesn't function that way. But her definition of an abstract, it's not so much as what you see, but it's how you feel, the emotion it creates when you look at the painting, which I thought was a pretty good definition, you know? So you either like it or you don't like it, or it causes an emotion in you. You know, or you connect, you know, with the artwork, and that's a good definition for abstract, because abstract can be like Jackson Pollock became famous for dripping house paint on a canvas on the floor. I mean,
or just even tubes of paint. He would just squeeze out paint off of the tube and just stick it on there.
Yep.
Cigarette butts even. Washers and screws, and
so, you know, it's kind of expanded, because then when this would get us into a whole another discussion of modern art, which I don't want to go down that road. So I think we're just about out of time. I hope for our listeners that this has cleared up some of the confusion, and that our non-artists, especially our non-artist listeners, and you can understand the next time you encounter that wacko, crazy-looking artist talking about their art.
And I wanted to say, like, I don't think it's that big of a deal if you don't know what a term means. Just ask. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of artists don't even know what some of the terms are, so it's not anything to be embarrassed about. Like, if you don't know,
don't be intimidated. Just go up and ask the artist. I mean, heck, half the time they're intimidated.
Or in this case,
you know, or not,
you tell you know, us trying to describe what things are, you know, I mean, we're not anything special. So,
hey, as you look at the now with, you know, with COVID-19, everybody's still pretty much, you know, hunkered down in their homes. So we're not going to very many art shows. We're not going to art museums because of the, you know, the fear of catching the virus. So we're doing it all online. There's a lot of art online and everything. So when you come across an artist's website or a particular painting or something, hey, at your fingertips, direct message and email, you know, and ask them about that painting. Artists will be delighted. I know I am very delighted if I receive an email asking me about my particular work and what style it is and what motivated me. Believe me, that artists like we like that kind of feedback, don't we, Diane?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, Constance. Okay. Okay, let's wrap this up. And you have been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 56 for July the 27th. And we've been talking with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And I'm going to say goodbye and good night to my two best artist friends. Good night, Diane, and good night, Constance.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Constance. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Dan. Good night, everybody. Thanks for stopping in.
Good night, folks. Thank you so much for listening.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.